Welcome back, everybody, to a brand new episode of the Speculators Podcast. I'm your host, Corbs, and today we put together a very special episode. We've put together a good old-fashioned mashup. Now, over the course of this podcast, we've had on some brilliant traders. We've covered a lot of great topics, and there's been a lot of wisdom shared across the episode. Now, what we're doing for the first time is we're putting together a culmination of different topics that are all related into one concise video for your viewing pleasure. Hopefully, we'll be doing a lot more of these in the future. We're working on putting those together, but today's the very first one. And for today, we're focusing in on the topic of paradigm. Now, if you don't know what a paradigm is, we all have one. This is how we make sense of what goes on in the world around us. And we all have very different paradigms in some cases. This is where you can take a figure like Donald Trump, somebody that is very polarizing. And on one hand, there are people out there that think that Donald Trump is the best thing that's ever happened to the world. And beyond that, they think that he has a place in biblical prophecy, and that he's fulfilling scripture, and that he's the second coming of a Messiah, and there's cult-like followings around this figure. And on the other side, let's say to the extreme, there's people who think Donald Trump is the worst possible thing that could ever happen to the world. And if he was ever to get back in power, it would be the end of America and maybe the worst thing that could possibly happen to the planet. Now, how do we have one person kind of doing the same thing in the world, but when we observe it, people have very different views? Well, the reason this happens is because of a paradigm. Now, this is generally as we move through the world, but in trading, it's very important that we also have a paradigm, a way to make sense of what is happening in the market. So we're not just sitting down at the screens and starting to push buttons. Now, some people think that when they sit down to trade, they're engaged in a financial warfare and they have to fight the market and it's a dangerous environment. Some people think that the market is just a game. They're out there just playing it. Some people think that it's a puzzle that they have to solve, and there's a list of different paradigms that traders have. In this episode, we've gone through some of the brilliant traders that have been a part of the podcast, and we've pulled out them discussing what they think of the market and how they make sense of what their job is and what they're doing when they sit down to the screens. I really hope you enjoy this topic. I hope you enjoy this episode. Before we jump into it, take a second and make sure you like the button. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel. And without further ado, enjoy the episode.
You know, it's a wonderful game in a sense that it doesn't matter how long you've been doing this job for, you are going to be learning for the rest of your career. You know, my North Star has always been, you know, the consistent pursuit of progression. And that's whether I'm doing triathlon, whether I'm being a dad, whether I'm being a trader, whether I'm being a husband, I always want to keep progressing. And trading is no different. Okay. You're always going to progress. There is no limitation to how good you can become. Other than the limitation you set for yourself. So it just depends on what you want. And not everyone wants that. Not everyone, you know, some people go, oh, you're a bit obsessive. You're a bit crazy. Why do you want to go for a run at 5 a.m? That's stupid. Why do you want to cycle 180Ks for fun? Because that's how I understand life. I understand it as, you know, in pursuit of progression.
Very nice. And I think you just kind of tapped into a little bit of maybe your worldview. And when you look at the market specifically, is there a kind of an underlying worldview that you have as far as this is a financial war and I have to, you know, be very protective, or this is an art and I'm the artist, or this is a puzzle that I'm trying to solve? Is there like a dominant thought that you have when you think of the market?
I'm very much about beating myself. I don't really, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones that I've never looked at other traders and I've never envied them. Okay. And there's a number of traders that are substantially, you know, have drawn out more profits out of the markets than what I have, but I never look at envy at them. Unfortunately, I was never born with that competitive bone. I don't look at them and go, oh, I want to be better than them. I'm going to work hard. Blah, blah, blah. No, I'm very much a believer in, last week I made these decisions and I didn't want to make that. What am I going to do this week to improve on it? So I'm very much driven by my own sort of ability to get better. And it's so much so that my wife knows me well enough to know that when I stop progressing, when I stop moving forward, that's typically when I'm about to hit sort of a pause button and I'm going to need to take a break. Because if I'm not progressing, I kind of get very hard on myself. I get very demotivated. I get very frustrated. So no, I don't look at the markets as anything other than it's a challenge and I'm going to come in and I'm going to try and beat it tomorrow. You know, I think as a trader, we have to be, and I've never met a trader that's not completely optimistic. We're optimistic yet pessimistic at the same time. We're, you know, we're kind of sort of bipolar in that sense. When it's going well, we'll tell you, you know, yeah, no, it's going well. I'm trading well. I'm in the zone. And when it's going horrible, it'll sound like it's the end of the world. But in actual fact, it isn't really. But no, I come in tomorrow and I like the challenge of it. I like, that I can be better tomorrow. I like that opportunity to try again. But yeah, I'm like everyone else. I go through emotional swings. I go through tough patches and I have to deal with it. The only difference I think between, you know, myself maybe 8 years ago is I didn't have the coping mechanisms back then. I now do. Okay? I know how to cope with pretty much any situation I encounter. And I'm ready for those drawbacks when they come. But equally, when the wave is there, it's fun to ride it. And hopefully many traders get to find that wave because it's a lot of fun. You know, when you're trading in a zone, when you've got the momentum on your side, you're consistently applying yourself. It does become poetic in a sense where, you know, you touch the market and it turns to gold and it just seems like you can't make many mistakes. I think. Bit of poetry there.
Do you have a worldview of how you think about the market? Like when you sit down and you're participating in the action, that this is a financial warfare and you're a soldier, or this is an artistic endeavor and this is your canvas and you're the painter. Do you have like a way that you interpret or you think about yourself as a trader interacting with the market?
Huh. That's a really interesting question. I like the painter. I'm not a warrior. I'm not fighting. I've seen people say that, zero sum, this is zero sum. And I don't believe that, you know, I might buy 20s and sell 30s. You buy 30s and sell 35s. Nobody lost. I made money. You made money. I'm not competing with thousands of other unnamed traders. I did that on the floor. 90% or more of the volume is created by computer programs. All I'm doing is surfing the market. I've got a plan. I've got a process and I'm like a surfer. I'm battling myself. I'm battling my weaknesses and my shortcomings. Yeah. And I'm looking to maximize my strengths and continually take money out of the markets every single day. So I'm just kind of surfing whatever price is doing on the floor. I created price. Algorithms create price now. I was a big trader. So if you were a two lot, five lot trader, you would feed off of the things that the trades that I didn't want. I would take 50 and 20 and 100, you know. I've always traded my own account. I've never traded it for anybody else. So on the screens, I am that small trader just surfing what the bigger traders are doing, like the smaller traders did with me on the floor. So I think maybe just kind of, I'm not a surfer. I've never surfed. But, you know, that's it. Just kind of being consistently surfing whatever it is that the algos are doing.
I like what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to be doing it forever. You know, I have friends, you know, who are retired. One of them is painting. And another one plays pickleball all the time. And, you know, I'll play some pickleball. I play tennis pretty regularly. But the thing that I like the most is trading. I'm a fly fisherman. I like to hunt fish. I like to figure out where they're hiding and then try to catch them. And, you know, for me, that's a fun thing. And I think trading is very similar to fishing or hunting. You know, and it's just fun. It's just fun to do. I enjoy doing it. I like to think. I like no distractions. I like to be sitting in a room with the door closed and just think all day long. All the things that I do, you know, that is what I like to do the most. I like to think. You know, Warren Buffett likes to read. He says more than anything else, he's reading all day long. He's reading about companies. And for me, I like to think about charts and I like to see them unfolding. And my reward is either I took the trade and I made money, or the other reward is it does what I thought it would do. You know, I find that satisfying.
Do you have a worldview or like a paradigm of how you look at the market? Maybe as this idea that, you know, this is like a blank canvas and I'm an artist trying to do something, or this is a giant puzzle I'm trying to solve, or is there kind of like a dominant worldview you have?
Well, I mean, sure. I often, you know, mention, for instance, my end of the day routine is, you know, kind of like a treasure hunt. Feel like a 8-year-old kid whose dad just buried coins on the beach and said, "Stat on my hair, go over there and dig up those coins. If you're good, you'll get $2.47. So for me, it's always a treasure hunt. I'm thrilled. You know, I love looking at the market and uncovering things and figuring them out and trying to anticipate the psychology of what's going on. So when I look at the fundamentals, it doesn't mean that I care so much about the fundamentals, but I view the fundamentals kind of the same as a chart. And by that, I mean, it's all about the psychology, that I'm not looking for heads and shoulders and cups and handles and, you know, things that people look for. Instead, I'm trying to understand the psychology of what forms that head and shoulders or cup and handle, yeah, and how the longs feel, how the shorts feel. And then I look at the fundamentals. I say, hey, you know, the company's got what appear to be great fundamentals. One, they might be lying to us, so I'm not going to take it at face value. That's another thing. I think you get more cynical the longer you're in this business because you've seen so many shenanigans and just rug pulls. So I look at it, though, and I say, you know, here, you know, the company seems to be growing well. They're stating big revenues and earnings. And I know that there is a market for people who are looking for those ideas. So we've got 10,000 different, you know, growth funds out there, and they're all competing for the same type of merchandise. So if they have these fundamentals that seem to fit those parameters, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, here we've got a group of people who's likely to be a buyer of these stocks and support them because they feel the fundamentals are good. So I have a little bit more confidence in those names if it's backed up on the chart. So that, you know, my worldview is, though, that each stock should be traded on its own merits. I really loathe these, you know, relative strength charts where people compare the NASDAQ with the IWM. I don't care. I'm not buying the NASDAQ with Russell 2000 shares. I'm buying it with US dollars. So I want to say, how is it, you know, on its own merits? If the Russell 2000 is in a downtrend, great. If the NASDAQ's in an uptrend, I'm going to trade that. I'm not going to try to, you know, do a pairs trade or something, but each trade on its own merits. And when there's more perceived risk, but I still like the setup, then it just means smaller share size.
Do you have some like go-to phrases that you repeat in your head while you're trading to keep you in track?
We could talk all day about this, and it's at the heart of emotional, mental performance, right? Like, trading is emotional because it deals with money, failure, to a very high levels that kind of attack us very easily, right? And trading is also, let's call it 100% mental, because we don't really, I'm a firm believer in like getting proficient with your platform and being able to use hotkeys and things like that to be quick, but it's not like it's a bunch of like finger dexterity required to be a good trader, right? So it's all mental. There's so many things to talk about here. Number one, I'll start with, we all start at what I refer to as natural human traders, okay? The things you were just describing are not unique to you, right? You're not like some broken individual that has like problems, right? We all deal with these things. So we're all, it's part of the understanding of this. And everything is about like, let's build up a really strong like foundation of like mental understanding, okay? So one is, we approach this game from a flawed place. We are not wired to do this well, okay? So let's just admit that and sit back and relax for a second, okay? So that's number one. Number two is a big thing to lean on, is that markets are random. That's right. You're hearing it from me, somebody who makes their living trading markets. They're random. Crude oil today was a coin flip, whether it could have just absolutely tanked and gone to my major target, or whether it absolutely reversed. I suppose at the maybe the same time where equities, you know, started to sell off. I don't know what happened. I don't keep up with news. Whether one of those two things happened or something in between, it's random. I have no idea. All I know is that the things that I can control, all I know is that if we are holding from a bearish line in the sand and I get my shorter term tactical opportunities to enter and put that risk on, it's my job to do so, right? So a lot of people, you know, for a third thing, so we're natural human traders, right? We're not good at this naturally. Markets have an inherent degree of randomness that we will never, ever get around. And a lot of what I'm talking about there is drawn from a lot of like Mark Douglas type teachings. And then like a lot of people get into trading because they think ultimate freedom, flexibility, blah, blah, blah. And in reality, like, you've got to work harder than you ever worked anything else in your life. You've got to commit more time. And like my Tuesday that I described to you, it used to look like 16 hours in front of the screens. I kid you not, right? I was grinding. All right, so where else should I go with this? We need to understand ourselves that we're not great at this. We need to understand superior ways of thinking about markets. We need to learn how to redefine success and failure. You know, it's like any person, I'll go back to tennis again. I put a tweet out about this recently. If you're totally winning and losing is totally defined upon like the actual outcome of the match, you're going to have more nerves. You're not going to be able to perform at the highest level. If you, maybe you tell yourself something, as you were alluding to earlier, can bring yourself back to a place of what's my job at hand right here. That's a very powerful, what's my game plan, right? Do I have a valid trade or whatever it was that you asked yourself? If there's not a trade there, then we're not going to, you know, do something, blah, blah, blah. So laying a good foundation, a changing of your thinking and understanding of markets and what they're really all about and what trading is really all about, rather than just some finding that magical formula, whatever. Now you're able to start to evolve in your thinking. Now, the fight or flight instincts, the getting pissed off and really, really mad when a trade doesn't work, right? And you did everything correctly on, right? Like one of those trades, it actually literally doesn't swell up the type of emotions that it used to, because you now have a superior way of thinking and understanding. And you are more like, let's say, the casino that doesn't start freaking out and flipping out just because some dude walks up and puts $5,000 on black and it hits, right? Should they start worrying about changing the game of roulette or doing something? No, that's just, it's a loss. That's what they're there to do. Give him some drinks, he'll give it back. Let's keep the sample size going. Sample size is important for traders too. So anyways, I'm rambling here, but it's just such a thing I just feel so strongly about. It's a major, major issue for traders. We just have to start to think about what we're doing differently so that the emotion isn't so strong and we don't spend the majority of our day trying to muster up some form of willpower to not do the right things. We can actually, to a certain degree, we're never going to be perfect, but we can rise above, at least in terms of severity, of those emotions that naturally flare up in trading and whatnot.
Yeah. But 100% agree. And I think it's very nice. You said a couple of things that are have been very interesting to me as of late. One of them just being what trading actually is. Like, what is our actual job? What are we actually doing here? I think there's a massive disconnect from people that want to start trading and just understanding like, what is the, like, almost like, what is the world view here of how we view what we do and what our job actually is. Mm-hmm. And you also said rethinking, what it means to
find what it means trade. To win or lose.
Yeah. And it was very wild to me. I just take a break from it kind of recently, but I was doing this kind of like live stream on YouTube every day. And it was amazing to me how many people reached out to me to say, I can't believe you're actually showing the trades that you took. And to me, it wasn't this thought of like, oh, I'm embarrassed that I had this losing trade. And people commented on it all the time, not even necessarily in a negative way, but I think it was like this shock of, you know, how many losing trades that I have, or how many trades fail, how many trades don't work out. And it's such a normal part of the day of like my trading experience to have trades that, you know, one out of every, however, get in and go straight to target, you know, then there's this wide variety of almost there and don't get there, immediately go against me, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that is not talked about enough. And there's a very wrong expectation about what the burden we put on ourselves to try and in this environment where it's going up and down and where we truly have no idea. I think this one in every-
It's not about perfecting analysis that should lead to a winning trade result. That's not what trading is about. But that's, I think that's the love affair when people get into it is they, again, they try to find that the best system, the best magical whatever. And I do think there are analytical tools that are better than others, right? I think you and I would both agree that profile it can be a tremendously powerful market worldview to lean on.
We trust.
Yeah. You know, much more so than let's say Elliott Wave or something. I would, you know, I never really met a great trader that would disagree with that. So there are better tools in some senses of the word, but that doesn't mean there's one tool, or if you don't trade with profile, you can't make it happen. Like that's just not the case, but it's really, really important to move past the amateur rookie level of thinking that the better your analysis you can get to, that your trade should then work. That's toxic, right? That will only lead to, where does frustration come from? A disconnect between what you want to be and reality, right? And if you want the trade to work and it should work and it doesn't, now you lose the whole purpose of any trader psychology, which is objectivity. When you lose objectivity, you can't see the truth of the reality of what the market's telling you at the hard right edge. Now you're doing things like we call, you know, on tilt or whatever.
We have a saying, I should have worn my shirt. Do less, do it better, do it bigger. Do less, like take less trades, listen to less nonsense, cut out the fat, do it better, which means get better at the things you're good at, drop the shit that you suck at, trading strategies included, and then get bigger. You want to get bigger in those best setups. You don't need to add more trades. Like you said, you don't need to.
I want to take a quick break from the episode to talk to you about TradeAct. If you're on the trading journey and if you're really about this life, you know that it's not easy. And if you're feeling lost in your trading, maybe you're not getting the results that you want. Maybe you're lost and you don't even know if you're doing the right things and if you're heading in the right direction. Don't worry, TradeAct's here to help. From our flagship product, the Profile Method, all the way to our entry-level product, the Profile Formula, there's going to be something for everybody, regardless of where you're at in the trading journey. TradeAct is my company that I help start. All of the content that I create, all of the trading that I do, it happens right inside of TradeAct. So if you're ready to take your trading to the next level, click the link below. You can get started today. Now let's get back to the episode.
I mean, you work with traders. I know you talk to guys every day. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, this is at least my experience. Most people take too many trades and they're incurring too many losses. If you can just help a trader stop taking losses, they're finding wins. They probably have rules that they're trying to follow and they're winning, but they're doing this extra stuff that's causing unnecessary losses. And that just over time, it ruins your P&L.
Yeah. Oh, I would say it's some people don't struggle with it at all, but as far as like across the board, the struggles, doing too much is the biggest issue. It's probably almost even still one of my biggest issues, is I always,
yeah, it can creep into all of us, bro. We're all susceptible to it. I think it's like trading is a beautiful thing. I'm seeing it even more as the years go by. When you focus on it too much, it almost gets like too difficult. It's like in golf. If you hold the golf club too hard and you choke, like squeeze it and white knuckle it, you're not going to do and hit it well. But if you hold it, you know, too loose, you'll let go of the club. So you can't not care about your trading. You have to care just enough. You have to take it just serious enough where you find that sweet spot. I call that, that's my groove. That's when I got my mojo back. You know what I mean? And that's where I'm not listening to a bunch of other people. I'm not getting distracted with social media. I'm not even getting distracted with the news, fundamental biases, because those could creep in and distract us at any moment. All these things try to influence you. But that groove is when I normally find my best trading, where I'm not getting influence and I'm not thinking about those other things, you know.
You got to care, but you can't care too much. That's a very,
isn't that nice interesting place, though? Because I feel like when I got into trading, nobody talked about that. No one preached that. But now I think as more people are getting onto, you know, sharing their trading journey, and people that have been trading for 15, 20 years are now more like Cameron Foose, I had him on my podcast, and these guys share it, you start to hear that more. And it would have been good advice for me as a new trader, because I think I take things too seriously and I overdo it sometimes. You know what I mean? Whereas if you just would relax, maybe not take it as seriously and just have some fun with it sometimes, you can still keep that passion for trading rather than getting burnt out from it, because you're just staying up all night drinking Monster, trying to figure out the next best backtested strategy to add 2% win rate in the backtesting, when you probably won't even be able to perform as well as the backtesting when it comes down to actually trading in the market, you know?
Sure. No doubt. Yeah, I think it's a great thing about what we do. There's this magic of being right in the present moment with our trades. And as soon as we start worrying about a trade failing or it working or trying to hit a certain P&L, or as soon as we start reflecting and bringing the baggage of a past trade into what we're doing, it is absolutely impossible to trade well. And when we can just focus on what the market is telling us and stay in that present moment, which is just wildly hard to do in life. Like, it's very hard to be focused. We are constantly, you know, have those temptations to be somewhere in the future, thinking about something somewhere in the past. And this is something I'll be somebody who can just focus on the future forever. Just think about it, dream about it. And this was a big issue for me, where I had to rope that in and be like, all right,
visit the future so I know where we're going, but let's bring it right back to here so we can get done what needs to happen. And it's like really a microcosm of that in our trading, you know?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think everybody should listen to that twice because most people don't fully grasp that. It's really well said.
Can I ask you this? When you think about trading, when you sit down at the screens, do you have a certain type of, I guess I would say worldview or like a paradigm of you think of what you're doing as like a puzzle that needs to be solved? Do you think about it like you're stepping into a financial warfare that's very dangerous? Do you think about it like it's a game? Do you have a kind of an underlying principled thought that you have when you think of trading?
I do. I think I look at it as an art. Right. To me, trading is not a science. It's an art. So every day, as soon as this market opens and the profile starts forming, the canvas is starting to be painted on. That's exactly how I look at it. I think I'm a little different than a lot of profile traders. I'm more of I dig deep into the intraday. I think a lot of profile traders see a bigger picture, weekly, monthly, or, past values and high volume nodes. I'm very, very deep into intraday. I think I read it very well. And that's why I think seeing it form its picture every day like that gives me the ability to tell my room what good odds, what I think the market is planning on doing, even before it happens, because it's setting up. I mean, there's so many, it's like a spoke on a wheel and there's 20 spokes and all that market generated information is on there. And when one side is really skewed, then you got to be on that side. When it's mixed and there's mixed MGI, well, then you either step away and don't do anything, or you look for rotational days. I tell no trade is a trade also, right? It's the money you keep, not the money you make. I know these are all sayings everybody's heard, but nobody really, I think, digs deep into them. One of my favorite ones, Corbs, is I like to make believe I'm a lion waiting in the tall grass and waiting for my prey to come by me. I don't want to be running all over the Serengeti trying to catch something.
Yeah.
Let it come to you. And that's what I try to focus on.
When you're looking at the market and you're sitting down to trade, do you have an overall kind of worldview? Like maybe you look at this as a, financial war that's dangerous and everybody's trying to kill each other. Do you look at this like an art and you're an artist coming in trying to paint a beautiful picture? Or do you have like an underlying kind of view of the market this way?
It's funny you ask this. I've never been asked this question. You're like, how do I view it in general? It's funny. I'll talk my way through this because I don't really have an answer right now. And part of this is, I see people bickering on Twitter about who's right or who's wrong. And I always look at it as like, man, I really don't care. I don't put myself through trying to be right. And, like I said, NVIDIA right now, everyone's talking about that. Or S&P's in a bear market. Oh, no, we're in a bull market. I mean, I always look at it as I don't really care about that stuff. I mean, I do in some ways. But really, when it comes down to it, I spend so little time thinking about those things that, I see these YouTube, guys putting stuff on YouTube with like, a fire is coming up, the world's burning, right? Or this is happening, the Fed is about to ruin your life, or this is the most important CPI of your lifetime. And I'm always like, okay. I mean, at the end of the day, I think when you do this long enough, you just look at it like this. We're not out here solving world problems. What we're trying to do is we're trying to make money as traders. We're here because we are capitalists. We want to come in. We want to be in business for ourselves. Most of us are really hard workers. We've got dedication, and most of us are good people. Like, we come in and we just want to go out there and we want to make a buck. And so I look at it as, if I look at it in a divisive way, it doesn't make me feel good about what I'm doing. Like, I like this business. I love it. I fought to stay in it at the beginning of my career. I fight to stay in it today. I look at it more as a challenge for me and myself. How disciplined am I in what I want to do? How good can I be? And I look at it more as a challenge for me to compete than anything. I don't look at the market as any sort of evil thing. I look at the market as opportunity.
If you wake up and you're sick, don't trade. If you wake up and there's something wrong, like if you're in a relationship and it's weighing on you, don't trade. If your pet died, don't trade. If a relative died, don't. Like, all of these things, what you just said. If there's something internally and you're off, if you're angry at the world for some reason, you should never even turn on the platform, because the instant you turn on that screen, you're going to want to trade. So if you're off, yeah, you shouldn't trade. And also you have to go into it as a business. So this is the other part that people don't really do. And I tell people this, if you are going to sink, let's just say $50,000 into a restaurant franchise, let's say a cheap, probably can't even do that anymore. But back in the day, you know, you buy a sandwich shop franchise or whatever, you're going to go about that very seriously, right? Like you're going to scout your location. You're going to count the foot traffic that comes by that place. You're going to know your cost. You're going to know your employees. Like you're going to put a lot of effort into it. But the same people that would do that would also put 50K in an account and just swing for the fences. They don't treat trading like a business. You have to treat trading like a business. It has to be viewed as, I am in this to make money, full stop. That's it. That's the only thing that matters. I don't care about ego. And the day-to-day results are only relative in the sense of a year-end result. So you have to view it from a month end, year end standpoint. And that's what can, like when you turn on your screen one day, if you want to make $500 that day, then you're going to lose money. But if you turn it on and you're like, well, my goal, you know, I'm trying to average out whatever, 10,000 a month, let's say, and I'm already up 4,000 on the month and today is not a good day. All right, fine. Turn off the screen. That's where that has to come into play. Like it has to be, I'm in this for money. I'm not in this to keep myself occupied or to be busy, you know? And again, that's very difficult if you don't have anything else to do, you know, between 8 a.m. and 1 p.m. or whatever, right? You have to occupy your time with something else, but it's necessary for long-term success.
I believe the markets are driven solely by human emotion, and humans are relatively predictable because we all tend to succumb to the same demons, so to speak. And so the markets are driven by fear and greed mostly. And that fear and greed is organized into different time frames. And that's basically how it is in a nutshell. You, if you're a trader, you can see very clearly how, and the market profile helps a lot with this. I'm a huge student of market profile. And that's essentially what the market profile does, is the market profile organizes the information of the market in a way that helps you to see which time frames are active versus not active, right? Where there's value versus price, et cetera, things like that. So that's what I think is the real driver of the market. I don't think it's random at all. I think almost every single market phenomenon price-wise can be explained through this lens of, okay, it's simply this time frame is doing this, this time frame is doing that, et cetera, et cetera.
And so maybe it'd be fair to say that on certain time frames, there are noise where we could say maybe that would be random type action. And then mixed within that, there are things that are more structured, things that are more clear, where the market is maybe trying to accomplish something, or maybe even inside of that noise, do you think the market is trying to accomplish something inside of that always?
I think that that's a very good question. I think that inside of the noise, the market may be trying to accomplish something, but what it's really telling us is that there's a consensus. Whenever you have noise where a range is compressed, at that time, value is fair. What is happening is an immense amount of futures contracts or particular shares in that stock or whatever the instrument is, they're being distributed back and forth amongst the players. And as we know, the most efficient type of market is the one that sells the most, essentially, right? I always tell people that what's going on in the market in the auction process is no different from a store that sells widgets or cars or whatever it is. If you have a dealership that sells one car a month, you're not an efficient market. But if that same dealership sells 1,000 cars a month, that's a very efficient market. And the price discovery that you get out of that is going to be very, very accurate, right? Like the thing that they sell 1,000 of in 1 month, you can be pretty darn sure that the price they're selling at is probably the fairest price. They're not ripping anybody off and nobody's getting it cheap. It's a very, very fair price because you have enough of a set, that defines value essentially, right? Because value, as we know, is defined by price plus time or price plus volume. If you just have price by itself, if I just tell you, you know, hey, this thing costs X, you have no real way of knowing if there's any value there or not. But if I tell you, you know, 1,000 of these have sold at X, you know, you'd be the 1,001 person to buy it, then you would feel more comfortable. You would say to yourself, okay, that's value. So when this noise is occurring, to me, the market is in balance and the market is just telling you that there's value.
The term I use called situational fluency, right? And it's a way better way of describing what we do than it depends, right? Because the answer to your question is like, it depends, right? But it depends doesn't help anybody. So I use the term situational fluency. You're looking to become, and other people talk about it as market context or flow state or things like this. But what I mean by situational fluency is the answer to how to size and manage an entry on one instrument versus the other is actually no different. It's just the same checklist that you're applying according to situational fluency. So here's the checklist. How much risk budget do you have at the time that entry is present, right? Because you're starting everything thinking risk first. That's all that matters. You're a risk manager. You're not trying to perfectly execute your strategy. You can't predict any tick because all, let me say this to your group, all price action is random. It's all random. Okay. Don't believe it's all random. Okay. I'm going to say it one more time. It's all random.
Scream it from the mountaintop.
Yeah. If you believe that you have this, yeah, but Rod, price stays 78% of the time within value area high and value. It's random. Every tick is random. The market participants, the algos, everything is happening. It's only going to get more random. So in fact, it's so random that the biggest hedge funds in the world these days can't even figure out how to produce the randomness of the markets. They're like predicting distances between the stars to try to generate their random number generators. And these are guys who are way smarter than me. They're like, we can't even figure out how to create anything as random as the market is. So anyhow, when it comes to those kinds of things, the first thing is, what's your risk budget? How much risk budget do you have? Because that depends on how you size an instrument that has more volatility than the other. The next thing is, what is the ATR of that instrument? So there are four things in trading, everybody. Risk management, high probability entries. Okay. If you do not have a strategy with high probability entries that you've walked forward tested, that you will go broke emotionally before anything else. Okay. Do not believe this nonsense that you can trade a strategy that has a 30% win rate. No, you can't. No one can emotionally deal with that. Okay. So risk management, high probability entries, volatility, and volume. That's it. If you have a trading strategy that does not account for volatility and volume, you don't have a trading strategy. You have no edge. It's all random anyway. So crude oil versus the S&P. What's my risk budget? How much risk budget do I have on the day? Am I up? Am I down? Have I not placed a trade yet? Because that's an actual consideration to how I size it, right? Because the entry is random. Again, it's a high probability entry, but the result of that is random, okay? So this will be a crazy thing. I've traded for 26 years, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of contracts without a stop, okay? I'm a risk manager. Of course I take stops. Of course I manage the risk, but I don't enter with any kind of pseudo risk reward ratio that's just in my head that's basically nonsense. Like, this will be my target and this is where my stop is. That makes a lot of traders feel good. It's all nonsense. So do you do everything within the context of the situation? So the situation dictates everything you do on every decision you make. So the reason I mention poker a lot is because the most elite, elite, elite poker players, the most elite, elite chess players, the most elite players in any game, that's all we're doing is playing a game, are thinking ahead of what their competition is going to do, how they're going to play out the entire thing. So if you're going to get involved in a hand, if you're playing poker, it sounds like you don't play poker, but if you're going to get involved in a hand against a very other talented player, before you even think about how that hand plays out, you have to understand, what's my chip size? How is that player running? What's going on? So it's all about situational fluency. And then you can do all this stuff before you're ever concerned with the chart or the instrument or anything like that. What's my risk? Is it a high probability entry? And then everything from then on just goes back to number one, as Warren Buffett said, two rules of trading: don't lose money, refer back to rule number one.
Strangely, I mean, everybody thinks of me as a trader, you know, with all the stories about me and the interviews and everything else. But in reality, I've always thought of myself as sort of an engineer that was running a data processing facility that happens to, as an outflow of all that data processing, send orders into brokers and get fills back, and, you know, a lot of data going back and forth. But I've always thought of myself as a data processing person rather than a trader. And I think because of that, my focus has always been on trying to run the business. Had to deal with employees, had to deal with, you know, data getting messed up or not having errors in it, and finding ways of checking and making the data more clean. And that pretty much fills up your day. So when you get really down to trading, as in, you know, like the perfect definition of making a decision, sending an order, getting back a fill, let's say, that becomes a very small part of my day. So I've always thought of the, you know, trying to be a little bit more long-term in my strategy because I didn't have time to sit there all day long and watch, you know, the screens.
When you think about markets and you sit down to trade, do you have a worldview that you bring into it? Like potentially I'm sitting down to financial warfare, or I am, this is an art that I'm doing and I'm a painter, any kind of like a underlying paradigm that you approach the market with?
So I always had a problem. My education is, how do I say that? My father was a member of the German Communist Party, and my education was very left on a liberal side, I would say. Yeah. So going into the financial markets is obviously the complete opposite of that mindset. Yeah. So I had to reframe it for myself. Otherwise, I would have kept sabotaging myself. So the way I do it is simply when I make money in FX, I take it away from the banks. And they have enough money anyway, and they're the bad guys. So, I mean, all good for me. You know, you only need a belief that works for you, and you can believe anything. You can kick out all your beliefs and fill your brain with completely new beliefs. And that works very well if you do it in the right way. So for me, I'm basically Tyler Durden, who's trying to blow up the banks by making shitloads of money. And I don't have any problem with that, so to speak. I think it's always funny when people say, oh, look at Bernie Sanders. He's a communist or he's a lefty, but he's also a millionaire. That doesn't go well together. I say that goes very well together. If a person works hard, let them earn their share. That's totally fine. Yeah, and you can still be pro-society and don't be an egoistic idiot.
Yeah. It's you said something that was one of the best things I've heard in a while. You said you only need a belief that works for you, and you can believe anything.
Yeah.
That is so profound, and it is so wildly true. And if you're not careful, you don't pick what you believe, and you still believe a lot of things. It's almost like the burden of being a human that has these conscious thoughts that we all believe something. And if you don't choose it, but anyway, the idea, you can believe, you only need a belief that works for you, and you can believe anything. I'm glad you said that.